Welcome to the podcast of Yale Environment 360. I'm Diane Toomey. This is the call of the Camiguin hawk owl, found only on one small island in the Philippines. Researchers recently identified it as a new species of owl, and they did the same for this bird. That's the Cebu hawk owl, found only on the Philippine island of the same name. In fact, it was the unique vocalizations of these owls, along with other differences, that led researchers to conclude they had a double celebration on their hands. Announcing the discovery of two new bird species in the same paper is rare nowadays. But if this year is typical, 18,000 new species of plants and animals will be discovered. Sounds like a lot. However, Quentin Wheeler isn't impressed.
Well, it does sound like a large number, but it's only a start.
Wheeler is the founding director of the International Institute of Species Exploration at Arizona State University. He and colleagues, including E.L. Wilson and Thomas Lovejoy, recently published a paper calling for a massive taxonomic endeavor. Taxonomy is the science of discovering, describing, and classifying species. The task? Discover the estimated 10 million species of plants and animals that remain unknown to science, and do it in the next 50 years. I asked Wheeler, who's a taxonomist specializing in beetles, to make the environmental case for such an intense effort.
The environmental argument is the most obvious and easy one, which is we need to create a baseline understanding of the biosphere. Unless we know what species exist and where they're distributed on Earth, we're at a huge disadvantage to detect or monitor changes in biodiversity. It's difficult to know whether a species is invasive in an ecosystem where it doesn't belong, or whether species are going extinct silently, unless you establish that baseline of knowing what's there to begin with.
And in terms of getting a good handle on a global taxonomic map in a world of climate change, what are your thoughts about that?
I stumbled on a paper when I was doing a literature review for a study we're doing in my lab, and realized that some of the beetles we're looking at are consumed by rodents. And if you look at ancient rodent dens, you can find remnants of these beetles. And there's pretty good evidence that some of these beetles responded to climate change at the end of the last glacial cycle, maybe as much as 1,500 years sooner than the trees that we've been using as markers of climate change. And if indeed a major climate change comes, 1,500 extra years to adapt could be a very useful thing. And it illustrates that because we know fewer than 10% of species on Earth, the odds that we have found the very best bioindicators of change is pretty slim.
For its 250-year history, the bottom line in taxonomy has been getting the researcher with the proper expertise access to the specimen that's unknown. And I think a lot of people might be surprised to learn that a lot of what remains unknown is sitting under our noses in the back rooms and basements of museums and other institutions. So what are the impediments to having those specimens identified?
The primary impediment is the paucity of experts available. We have not been training experts at a rate that will allow us to replace older experts as they retire. A second bottleneck is just the accessibility of collections. Right now, if I want to see a type specimen in London or Paris or the Smithsonian, I need to travel to those cities. And as much as I like doing so, it's not very efficient. That's something where an investment in cyber infrastructure to create what we call cyber taxonomy will relieve a good deal of that.
The digitization of these collections would help enormously, I take it.
Absolutely. Digitizing them suddenly makes them available online. An even imperfect image can often allow an expert to exclude the possibility that it's a particular species or to definitely conclude that it's a new one.
So what percentage of these collections are digitized, and what are the impediments to getting the rest of it digitized?
It's a small percentage so far that's digitized. The biggest challenge is that we estimate there are perhaps 3 billion specimens in the natural history museums and herbaria of the world. So digitizing them all is no small matter. the National Science Foundation has an initiative underway to digitize collections, and that's helping to advance the process considerably. Those sorts of libraries of archived images are invaluable, and maybe the most valuable thing is that you don't have to wait in line to see them. You can go online 24/7, but occasionally they don't capture the information you need. So what do we do next? In a collaborative project with the Smithsonian and the Natural History Museums in London and Paris, and a small business in Virginia called Visionary Digital, we've designed and constructed several remotely operable microscopes. And the first generation of these is targeted specifically for insect collections. Insects account for about half of all the named species. So if we can master that, we've mastered at least half the backlog. So these instruments will allow an expert to examine, to manipulate moving the specimen on multiple axes so that you can accomplish what you typically would accomplish by visiting a museum.
You're going to be launching these telemicroscopy systems in December, is that correct?
That's our goal, is to have them running. We have installed the instruments in London and Paris. The Smithsonian one actually just shipped today. And we see this as the first step towards cyber taxonomy. We're already toying with ideas of using robots to load the specimens on the instruments.
So when a new specimen is collected at some point in the future, are you saying that it then would immediately be digitized?
Well, this was, you know, one of the lessons I learned when I moved to to Arizona, to the Southwest, is the cowboy logic that the first thing you do when you find yourself in a hole is stop digging. It's absolutely inexcusable that we're continuing to add to the backlog of undatabased, undigitized specimens. So you're absolutely right. But to make that efficient, we do need to look at ways of automating the process of digitizing specimens on a routine basis as they come in.
You've even talked about automating identification itself.
Well, this is not a new idea. People have been working on various ways of automating identification for several decades. People have worked with image recognition software. And in at least one project I'm aware of that dealt with really complex anatomical structures, amazingly complex, they were able to achieve, you know, well over 90% accuracy in identifying species in an automated fashion. So there's great potential there. And then, of course, using molecular markers, using bits of DNA to uniquely identify specimens, is another area that's developing very rapidly.
And are taxonomists waiting with bated breath for these innovations, or are they being dragged kicking and screaming into the 21st century?
All the above. You know, some people are more excited about this than others. The legitimate hesitancy that I've seen in some essays published in scientific journals are some of my colleagues, particularly in South America, who are concerned that embracing cyber infrastructure will simply be the latest diversion of resources away from the serious work that we need to do, which is boots on the ground, growing collections, making sure that we're actually getting the taxonomy done and not just diverting all of our resources into another wave of new technology.
You mentioned researchers in South America. How do researchers in the developing world, where much of the planet's biodiversity resides, figure into your vision of a global taxonomic survey? And what are the barriers to their participation?
Well, the barriers to scientists working in developing countries are primarily that most of the type specimens described over the last couple centuries reside in museums or herbaria in Europe or North America. Between images and remotely operable instruments, we're solving that problem. And literature has been another constraint. In the past, it was a privileged few professionals who had access to a world-class library. And in taxonomy, unlike most branches of science, you routinely have to go back and study and understand papers published beginning in 1758. And some of that early literature is very difficult to access. But digitization is suddenly changing all of this. the Biodiversity Heritage Library Project has digitized well over 30 million pages of the literature and will eventually have the last 2.5 centuries of taxonomic knowledge openly available to anyone. And so, along with cyber taxonomy, one of the most exciting things is what I would call democratization of taxonomy. And this means that we're leveling the playing field, not only for students and scientists in developing nations, but also students and faculty at smaller institutions and amateurs in particular. And I'm not certain that the community is quite ready for a coming onslaught, a rebirth of interest in amateur taxonomy, but the train has left the station. I think it's exciting and inevitable, and it's going to be a really important part of the workforce in the 21st century.
So some Harvard professor may be upstaged by a 12-year-old in Iowa.
Well, I wouldn't rule it out.
You readily admit that taxonomists are underfunded, overworked, and get no respect.
Yeah, we're the Rodney Dangerfield of the biological sciences, unfortunately.
So how does the field fight back? How does the field achieve what you've described as a renaissance in taxonomy?
I think the greatest advantage we have is that the specimens themselves are so visually stunning, and the evolutionary adaptations are so unbelievably unpredictable. And as we digitize all of this information and make it available to the public, I think the real renaissance will come from a grassroots support.
But it will take money.
It will take money. But I would point out that not doing an inventory is not free either. There are enormous hidden costs to failing to do this. We will make poor decisions about conservation and end up with less biodiversity sustained in the long run than we might have done if we had enough data to begin with. We will be unable to intercept invasive species at our ports of entry because we don't recognize them as being foreign. And maybe the greatest cost of all is the knowledge associated with the unique features of all these species.
Dr. Wheeler, a final question. Have you thought of raffling off chances to name a species as a fundraising tool for all this?
I've thought of a lot of things. a number of people and institutions have done that and done so rather successfully. Maybe one reason I haven't pursued that very aggressively, and for reasons I don't understand, you know, insects are just less glamorous to most people than say, a beautiful coral fish or a new bird or a monkey.
That's Quentin Wheeler, director of the International Institute of Species Exploration. And if you'd like to see a photo of a new species of monkey, go to our website, e360.yale.edu, where you'll find a photo gallery of species new to science, including the snub-nosed, sneezing monkey of Myanmar. That website again is e360.yale.edu. The call of the Kamegan hawk owl heard at the top of the podcast was recorded by Robert Hutchinson. The sound of the Cebu hawk owl was recorded by Bram de Mulemeester. I'm Diane Toomey. Thanks for listening. The opinions and views expressed in this podcast are those of the guest and not of Yale Environment 360 or Yale University. Theme music by Swivel Neck Jones, available at magnatune.com.